Welcome to another Words to Mouth interview. I'm Carrie, and I produce this show to introduce you to authors and the books they write, and to offer you a chance to win free books. Today, I have with me Gail Connop Baker, author of Cancer is a Bitch, or I'd Rather Be Having a Midlife Crisis. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your story. I have to say, Gail, I like your style. You shoot from the hip. You're a little bit irreverent, and you add humor to a pretty terrifying subject. So your book really reads more like a novel than a memoir.
It's funny that you say that. I was just talking to a friend of mine, and I was still getting my elevator pitch going, even though I should have it down by now.
Right.
And I said, it's really hard for me to describe my book because I think some people read it like it's a health book, but it's really not a health book. And then they read it like a memoir, but in some ways it is a memoir, but then it reads like a novel. So my friend said that, she said, it is a health book, but it's not. It is a memoir, but it is. It's definitely not a novel, but it has the narrative power of one. So I just thought there's something, it's sort of like a health memoir that reads like a novel, I guess.
Yeah, it's like it goes across every genre. You just can't quite put it into words.
It defies genre. That's it. That's what she said.
Yeah. I guess we'll take it from the memoir standpoint, because really asking you about the book is asking you about yourself. And I like to offer listeners and readers a chance to get to know the author. Can you sort of bring us up to date on what brought you to this particular book? You've always been a writer, correct?
Right. Okay. I was a fiction writer. I've been writing fiction probably 20 years. Actually, I started as a poet. Then I wrote short stories. My dog.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
And then I moved on to novels. And I had completed a novel. Well, I'd started one years ago, but I'd completed it by about 2002, got an agent, and was out on submission. And in the meantime, I started writing another novel, and that was about a woman who finds a lump in her breast and wonders if she's lived a meaningful life. So I wrote this second novel while my first one was on submission, thinking this will be my big novel. This will be the one that will actually launch my career.
Right.
And about 2 weeks later, I went into my annual mammogram. So this is now 2006. And I 2 weeks later, I was having surgery. So I had my own breast cancer. So it was kind of weird because I had written this novel. It was almost like I had written my life. And so that kind of freaked me out. But in the meantime, I had submitted that novel. I'd given that novel to my agent who hadn't sold my first novel, and she didn't like that novel.
Oh, really?
She said, basically, I didn't tell her that I submit this. I'm, like, waiting for my results from surgery, not telling her because I was afraid. I didn't want to tell anyone at first. You know, it's kind of scary to tell people. You don't want to label yourself. I mean, it was just, I lived in that state of mind for a long time. So I didn't tell her. And then I get this email from her, and it's like, you know, I don't really care if the woman has breast cancer or not, basically. I mean, she was making a statement about it as a novel.
Right.
But it was just kind of an interesting thing. So the way I started, I tell people I'm a completely accidental memoirist. I meant to write, I did not mean to write this, but I was pretty much in a stunned state of mind, and I could not write. I have to say right after. I couldn't really do anything. My husband would come home and I'd just be like staring out the window. I just was having all this flood of crazy thoughts. So he bought me some journals. I had never written in journals, and I just started filling these journals with the rawest, most intimate thoughts that I actually didn't want to burden anyone with, which is so ironic because now people can go to Amazon and buy those scary thoughts.
It is true. When you have a journal, it's almost like free therapy because you can just kind of throw out all that emotion and not worry about how you're affecting other people. And
right.
It's neat to see that it's, you know, it is helping other people now. And I just wonder, when you were talking about that, do you feel like on some sense that you're, I don't know if you think it's spiritually or just on some sixth sense that you knew something was up with your body? Or
I do. I think that I can't even look back at that novel. I haven't looked at it since this happened, because also there were so many thoughts and feelings and ideas that did run through my mind. And I don't think it's just because I had written the novel. It was like I had written my future in some weird way. I'm not sure what that means. I guess I knew. I must have. I always was a little afraid of cancer. You know, I remember watching, like, Stepmom. Do you know Stepmom?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I would like weep. I even remember like terms of endearment. Oh my God. I just always pictured that mother on the bed with the kids. Those movies made me weep. And this was like never. I mean, this is years ago. And so I always had some kind of feeling like of some connection to women who'd had cancer, although I wouldn't have said that verbal, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have been able to articulate that back then. I just know those movies always made me cry really hard. And I just think that there was a part of me that maybe, could you know that? I don't know. This is sounding a little new agey, but
yeah. You
know.
You haven't gone back to read that book, but do you think that you were spot on? Do you think that you wrote it correctly? You know what I'm saying? Like you had that true sense of what it was like?
I think I did, but I think I didn't know even, I mean, I think I probably, it was much more intense and deeper than what I could have imagined, but I think I did kind of hit on some of the real feelings, some of those feelings of mainly the ones about that kind of feeling like as a woman, how you reach middle age, which is really what my book is almost more about than the cancer, is that reaching that middle age and realizing that this is your life. So all the choices you did and didn't make, you know, you're living your life. It's not about what you didn't do, you know, before, and it's not about what you're planning to do. It's right now. And I think I did really focus on that. That part, I think, is in there. The part I didn't expect was this connection. I felt this almost like collective grief and compassion that I started feeling for everyone who suffers, like with cancer. I just felt suddenly this kind of universal sense of like a collective grief for people who suffer. And I didn't write that in there at all. I didn't expect that. And that's been kind of a beautiful thing in a way, kind of painful, but beautiful too, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, it's when you go through some really tough times in your life and you can come out of it and be able to reach out to others, you do see the gift in your own suffering. You know, it's interesting. I had put out a kind of a shout out that I was going to be speaking with you, and one of my listeners, I'm going to go ahead and ask you the question because it relates to what you're talking about. She says, her name is Angela Lamb Turpin, and she asks, she just finished reading Live a Little by Kim Green, a fictional account of a woman misdiagnosed with cancer who actually transforms her life by riding the cancer bandwagon instead of telling everyone the truth of her misdiagnosis. And she's asking you, did cancer give you the opportunity to transform your life in ways being healthy couldn't? And would you be a different person today without your diagnosis? So that's
absolutely. It has transformed me in countless ways. It gave me license to declutter my life. It taught me, it caused me to renegotiate my entire relationship with both myself, with my husband, and just really look at, like I said, the choices I had made and I didn't make, and made me question why I hesitated so much. I stopped hesitating. I suddenly felt this sense of urgency, even after I was told, okay, you know, I had, you know, the best of the bad diagnosis. It was not invasive. And, you know, it was basically, I should have just gotten up and just kind of gotten on with my life, even though there's a big, you know, I had this big fear of recurrence, but it's not like I had a very late stage cancer. But it just made, the sense of my mortality changed my entire feeling about what constitutes my life. My life is now. My life are the choices I make in this moment. And it also gave me an entirely different feeling about, it woke me up, I'd have to say, to both little things and big things. I mean, like, I would look, after I got past the being stunned and staring out the window and feeling numb, I just started noticing, like, oh my God, look at that gorgeous tree out. I'm just looking at it now. Look at that tree. It was just like, I hadn't noticed that stuff. Just all these little things, or the smile on my children's faces. I mean, I thought I was noticing these things, but they just became so much more vivid. And that vividness, I think, is what ended up in the book, partly, is that I just felt like everything looked more vivid to me. And I thought I think that's why I started writing this, is that I felt like, wow, the light really got turned on here, and I just want to record this because I feel like I'm in this kind of intense moment. and the intensity hasn't really stopped. And so in the meantime, what happened is I wrote and sold a book. I ran 2 half marathons. I went to yoga boot camp, and I'm half. This is all has happened in 2.5 years since my surgery.
Uh-huh.
So it completely changed me from being a person who thought about doing things but often didn't do the whole follow-through or would overthink and would not necessarily take it all the way, to someone who takes everything all the way, all the time. You know, it's
right.
almost created a monster, because now I have to like live that life. And it's called me on the carpet. I now have to live my truth, because I wrote this memoir. This is who I am now, and now this is who I have to be. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, let me ask you a question. You mentioned that you had to change or redefine your relationship with your husband. How have you changed in relationships? Like, are you saying that you used to kind of stand back and kind of let him maybe manage the relationship, and now you have more of a voice? Or what did you mean by that? Okay.
Yes, and also I think I kept thinking my turn was coming. I mean, when we got married, I supported us in the beginning, and then he started medical school. Then he was, we had our first baby as he was finishing up medical school. And then he was an intern and a resident, and he was working, you know, 100, 120 hours a week. We had never really negotiated the idea I was staying home. It just sort of happened. I thought I would always work. But suddenly I was kind of like the single mom with the husband never home. And so then we ended up having 2 more kids, and, you know, life just kind of took on its own thing, and I lost track of myself in it, but didn't really realize it, because I think, as many women think, that, well, it'll happen tomorrow. You know, it'll happen after the holidays, or after the kids go back to school, or after this or after that. And I'd kind of reached that point that I thought was my turn. So our oldest was going to college. My kids were now all in school. My youngest was, you know, getting older. He was 9. And I thought, now's kind of my turn. And then I got the diagnosis.
Yeah.
So I guess I realized that I wasn't strong enough in terms of making clear what it was I wanted as a woman out of my life. It was so easy for me to kind of meld into the background and sort of fit myself in little places here and there. But it wasn't me. I didn't feel like, I remember looking at the calendar. This is, you know, I don't even know when it was, but I remember looking at the calendar one day and realizing that the calendar was filled with everyone's stuff, and I don't think I had one thing on there for the whole month that was me.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, okay, where am I in this picture? So I think it gave me the license to feel okay and not guilty about saying, what about me? You know what I mean? I want a life in addition to being the mother and the wife and, you know, and the friend and and all those things. I want a life. I had my own ambitions, and now is the time. If not now, when? That's what I kept thinking, you know.
Right, right.
When was going to be the time?
Right.
So instead of asking why to do things, I would overthink it. I would think, why not? And it really kind of shook my husband at first, because he wasn't used to me just doing, I would talk about, oh, you know, maybe I'll run this half marathon. That just would be one example. But instead of saying that, suddenly I was signing up. I said, you know, I'm going to New York in August. And he was like, oh, when did you decide that? It was like I said, yeah, I got the tickets. I'm going to New York. I'm doing this. And it was like one thing after another like that. And so the renegotiation, I guess, was more probably a little forced, because suddenly I changed the dynamic.
Right.
I changed the dynamic because I changed myself, and it wasn't so conscious. It just started happening. I just started doing it, and then it felt good. It was like, yeah, why not? Why not do these things? Why? I think I had always thought, I would think of reasons like, oh, I'm not really a good enough runner, or, oh, maybe there are better writers. You know how you can talk yourself out of all the reasons not to make that next push?
Sure.
And then I thought, what do I have to lose? I think that it gave me that feeling like, what do I have to lose? I mean, I'd already faced my biggest fear. So all this other stuff didn't seem very scary.
Uh-huh.
It gave me a sort of fearlessness.
Well, it's true that, let's admit, it's not your husband's fault that, you know, it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're shifting the dynamics. We'd fall into that pretty easily when we have kids, and it is very easy to lose yourself. And, you know, I started thinking about, I have a good friend. I think I mentioned this to you via email, but she has a very rare cancer, or she's had it, and it has come back a few times. So she's got that kind of fear over her shoulder, or that urgency yes. that you talk about, that mm-hmm. you've got to live life the way that you want to, or you might lose it or whatever. But one of the things that she said to me is that when she was going through treatment, she felt more spiritually grounded or more tapped into what you were talking about, just appreciating life, than when she's in those times when everything's, she, you know, has that clean bill of health. Do you kind of fall back sometimes and have to, I think you mentioned a little bit before that you have a little bit of a, now that you've written this book, you kind of have to be, you know, on. Right. Do you have those moments when you don't feel quite as connected?
I think she's absolutely right. And it's funny for me, and I don't know if this is maybe for her, I go through cycles, because like I just had my, I get checked every 6 months. So I'm now like a month and a half out from my last checkup, and I can get into a more complacent place. Like, I can start feeling like, oh, okay, I forget about that. It's not that the fear ever goes away. It just maybe moves a little further back in my head. You know, it's not like right in front. And so then you do kind of fall back into taking, I can take things a little too much for granted and not notice those things that I was talking about as much. But then as the time goes on and it starts leading up, there is that reminder again. There's like, okay. And then suddenly a big thing is that those kind of, I think she's right about life just feeling more spiritual, and you really get a sense of what really matters, because the stuff, the bullshit, I don't know if you want me to say
that. That's okay.
It just falls away. It falls away when you're looking at this other stuff. Suddenly, all these little petty things, someone said something or did something or something went wrong, none of that really matters, because you're thinking, okay, I want to be here. This is life, and, you know, I want to sit here with my kids, and I want to see them grow up and all that. Suddenly, that stuff, you just suddenly get a new dose, a reminder of that. So yes, in some ways, I remember, like, right after I got over my, was less stunned, there was almost this feeling of euphoria. I call it, like, there's a quote from Emerson about feeling exhilaration on the brink of fear, and it is sort of like that. It's like with almost this sense of exhilaration, but with that fear, I guess, kind of underneath it and driving it. It's kind of a weird thing. And I don't quite feel that right now, because I've had, you know, now 2.5 years, going on 3 years of clean bill of health. So I think you get further, you know, I think just because it would be hard to live like that all the time.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. And, you know, I can liken that to, well, my husband and I went through a really rough time with losing a business, and having that glimpse into the fact that, hey, you know what, we're healthy, our kids are healthy, and if we have to start over, we have to start over. And also a mission trip to Africa that I took that was a total glimpse into what's really, you know, important. But I relate to what you're saying about having to stay in that moment all the time. I do struggle with that too. It's like, well, I'll find myself getting torqued out of shape about something silly, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know,
right.
So...
to keep that, and it's funny you mention it, because I was thinking that I want to find that now that I'm in this pre-launch time, when you can get very caught up in lots of little things that seem like a big thing and get you upset, you know, things that go right, things that don't go right, and the lack of control. And I think I need to just tap back into that feeling of, you know, in the bigger picture of things, these mm-hmm. don't really matter. Do you know what I mean? This
yeah.
is not what really matters. But it's hard. It is hard to do that. And I know a woman I just met recently who had her own health scare. Again, a woman who is okay now, but lives with that fear hanging over her head of recurrence. I think she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. She said sometimes she has to stop herself from being irritated with other people who are being sort of petty about life, because she thinks, you know what I mean? Like, she
yeah.
can get this feeling like almost like judgmental. And I'm not saying that I do that, but I understood exactly what she was saying. It was like thinking, wow, you don't even know
right.
how bad things could be if you're going to complain about that. And, you know, and I don't want to live in that state either of thinking that, because people don't know. And I think, like, when I think of people like reading my book, I think I want them to be able to live vicariously through what I went through without having to go through it, because I
right.
wouldn't wish that on anyone. But to get that feeling that I got out of it anyway, that's my hope, to inspire women to kind of do the things that I'm now putting into action because I went through that, but not having to actually go through it.
Another one of Angela's questions was, what advice would you give someone who has been newly diagnosed with cancer?
Well, That's a great question. First of all, I think it's really important to be okay with being upset about it and thinking this is unfair, because it is unfair and it's hard, and I think it's okay to dive right into that feeling and not, like, I think society and people around us often make us feel like, oh, you can't be self-pitying. And I'm not saying to stay there, but I think it's okay to live in that, you know, whatever you're feeling, that's okay. It's shocking. And it doesn't feel, it feels unfair. It just doesn't feel like this is, you know,
right,
should be happening. So I think that's okay. But then I think it's just really important to then allow yourself to move on from that point. And I think without going in there, you can't really. But for breast cancer in particular, for a woman, I think it does a real number on your sense of yourself as a woman, your body image, and your sense of sexuality. And I tell women, if you can, you know, I know it's hard during treatment and after surgery, you're not feeling great, but I think, like, having sex with your husband is really good, you know, or if you're not, or if you have a boyfriend or something, I think you need to get back to that, because I think it can do a serious number on your whole sense of being a woman. And I also think it's good to let people help you. That was really hard for me. I had so many wonderful friends who, you know, wanted to bring me food and take my kids and, you know, during all that. And I was not the kind of person who was comfortable with that.
Right.
But I realized not only is it important because you need to take care of yourself, but I think it's important for the people who care about you. They really want to do that. And I didn't understand that part of it.
Yeah.
So it's really a beautiful thing. I mean, I feel that's another thing I didn't know. Now, I didn't write that in the novel either. I had no idea how many amazing people were in my life. I'm not saying I didn't know I had friends, but I didn't understand the depth of that until this happened. And I was like, wow, these people, when my friend, a friend of mine who said, you know, if you have to shave your head, I'm going to shave my head in solidarity. I had no idea that we had that kind of friendship. I honestly didn't. So I guess, like, letting people in,
yeah,
including, you know, your husband, and being, I think I was really honest with my kids. I'm not sure if that's good advice or not, but I couldn't not be. But then later, after I already did that and I couldn't take it back, I think I realized that their imaginations would probably almost be worse than what I could say. I mean, it's not like I told them every little thing, mm-hmm, but I cried in front of them. I did.
I think that's, I personally think that's okay, because it gets back to what you started out with saying, and that's just my, that's my take on how I deal with my kids too, is that, yeah, you don't lose it and go completely off the wall,
yeah,
but for them to see you going through that, that season of, you know, grief, sadness, fear,
yeah,
you know, then that is a model to them that they,
yeah,
you know, that they do the same thing, and that you don't have to cover up when you're not feeling A-okay, and that, and then they get to see you come through it and be okay,
oh, yeah,
you know?
And now they're so excited that I, like my son, who's 12 now, he was like, Mom, you've really turned this around for yourself, or something really cute.
Aww.
Like that the other day.
When That's pretty, you know, profound, yeah.
Yeah,
you,
it was adorable. And I thought, yeah, I guess it did happen that way.
I was going to ask you this question. You talked about one of your, when you recommended that you get back to the bedroom with your husband and make sure that you go that route. One of the things that you said in your book, you said, the only time I'd felt entirely comfortable with my breasts was when I was nursing. Otherwise, I'd always had a love-hate relationship with them, and I wondered how that has changed, if it has.
Okay. That's a great question. No one has ever asked me that. I think, okay, there are several answers. One is that I think one thing I learned through all this is that as a woman, I need to love myself and my body. And I'm still sort of struggling with that, but I try to remind myself that every day. This is my body, and I want to love it as it's aging in whatever form it is. As far as my breasts go, I have one breast that's had 7 biopsies. I still have my breasts, but my body is... I mean, what I didn't love before is so sad because,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
it's not there. And so, but I'm trying to be okay with that. And I think I even wrote in the book, there was the time when I went to New York and I ended up showing my worst scar. It's just at the top of my right breast to my friends. And they, as wonderful friends they are, said, oh, no, it's actually kind of sexy. You know, I just showed the little top. I pulled it down a little. But I'm trying to just even say, okay, I have a scarred breast.
Uh-huh.
And it's okay, and I'm working on that. It's an evolution. I can't say I wish I could tell you I have gotten over that.
Yeah,
but I haven't. I'm kind of working through that.
The girlfriend that I was telling you about, she's got a scar that goes from her navel, like all the way around to the center of her back, and she calls it her battle scar. You know, she too. It's, you know, you want to be all you know, altruistic and all everything's all great, yeah, or whatever, but it is still a struggle for her, especially in our culture and, you know, the
it
way
it is. I mean, yeah, we expect perfection. It's just all. I mean, this is so far from. I mean, with people like making, you know, perfect breasts, even when they have their breasts that are not scarred.
Exactly.
So, but I'm, you know, I could go back and probably have that all fixed, and I'm not going to. I don't want to go through another surgery. My husband said that the other day, you can go have that fixed.
Yeah.
Good, but I'm like, I'm not going to have an elective surgery, not when I've had so many surgeries I didn't elect, and there's the risk of, there's always risk in surgery. So no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to learn to, I think it's a healthy thing for me to try to learn to live with the scars, and be okay with,
yeah,
that.
And, you know, for, my perspective is it's whatever works for you. If you feel okay with that, you know,
yeah,
that's your track. And women who don't, and they just feel like they need to get that fixed for their own whatever reason, you know, it's like you were saying before,
oh,
just to,
yeah,
be compassionate to whatever,
yeah,
works. We women can be so competitive,
yes,
with,
oh,
you know?
And I didn't mean, I hope I didn't sound too,
no, you didn't, no.
If a woman does that, I think it's wonderful. And if I had thought about it at the time, I might have said, let's do it all. Sometimes I think I should have just had them taken off, which some women do, especially with the level of risk that I have. But again, that would require another surgery. But I totally think that's a great idea too. Just do that, and then they have reconstruction. And I think any choice that a woman makes in this situation that's right for her is the right thing.
Yeah, personal, and you know.
You know, there was one more thing when you'd asked me about what advice do I have, and there was one more thing.
Okay,
stop putting off everything that you put off. I mean, that's kind of an obvious one. Like, I think once you get past that point of, you know, self-pity and just stunned and all that stuff, I think that's a great time to take a life assessment, you know, and think, what is it I meant to do? And who did I mean to be? And just start being that person. I know that, I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, that person that we keep thinking we're going to be, just start being that person right now and start living that life that you meant to live. And it's not as hard as it might seem. It just kind of, it can take on its own. You know, I think it gives you a great excuse to do that. And so, and that's where you can get the silver lining out of it, I think.
Yeah.
So it's awful, but now I don't have time. I'm not going to waste time. And every day I can, every moment I can make that choice that kind of sets me in the direction of my dreams and what I really want out of life. And that could be in every aspect, in terms of your relationships with people, in terms of your relationship with, you know, your career and your body, anything. All those things you can start to rethink. So I think that's the good part about it.
That's the biggest message that it sounds like that you want people to get from your book. When you talked about them living vicariously through you, not having to go through the cancer, but getting that nugget right there sounds like what you wanted to convey to.
Yeah.
Okay. One more question from Angela. She gave me a lot of questions. I know. I should have her do one of these shows for me. She asks, how has your writing changed since you embarked on your journey to healing?
Well, oh my God, that's huge, because I haven't written fiction since. I have not written one word of fiction. I tried. I tried one day. I thought, oh, I'll just write a little story. All I can do now is write from my life. Because I think initially it was because I didn't know this at the time. This was upon reflection. I think I needed to ground myself in the here and now. So going into fiction was taking me out of the life that I was kind of needing to remind myself why it was so important to be here. I mean, this is kind of subconsciously. But as I started writing for my life, I realized there were so many, it kind of opened my eyes up to the wonderful stories in life and how there's so much that I could write about and sort of and weave things, you know, weave things from my past and weave things in from just thoughts I had. I'm really enjoying this, writing from my life. And so it's completely switched how, I mean, now I've only written, and my next book that I'm working on is all from my life. It's about marriage.
Ah.
Called Anatomy of a Marriage, because I realized as I was writing the book that I was just kept delving sort of deeper and deeper into my marriage. And when I had the column that the book came from, people were very curious about the marriage. And so I'm just writing from my life. So I guess that's probably the biggest way that it's changed.
And so if I ask you what's next for you, apart from the book promotion, that's really what you're doing, is really focusing on completing that book.
Yes. Right now we're finishing the proposal for that. We're working on that, and then that'll go on submission.
Oh, okay.
I'm also launching a book. There's a lot that you do that is not really writing, but doing things like interviews and talking about your book and setting up. I mean, I'm going to be leaving in a few weeks to go to San Francisco and then New York for some readings. And so it's kind of interesting once you get a book published how much you're doing that's not writing anymore.
I know.
The writers have told you that.
Yeah.
And it's almost hard to kind of fit that back in when you've had, yeah, it's different. So a lot of my time is really spent right now on things that are related to publicity for this book coming out.
Yeah, I recently submitted a little article to a blog called Murder by Four, and it's called Not Your Grandmother's Book Promotion. And there's a lot of, yeah, because that's, you know, especially with new media and all that's out there as far as the different talk shows and mm-hmm. the bloggers and the opportunity to get, you know, I know that authors now are calling up book clubs and having those conversations. So there's so much that you can do outside of the traditional methods. I saw on your website, and I wanted you to, first of all, okay, why don't you tell us how readers can get in touch with you? You have a wonderful website and blog.
Okay.
What's the address to that?
It's GailKonopBaker.com.
Okay.
So that's Gail Conop Baker, one word, .com.
Okay.
And yeah, you can get to my blog from there. And yeah, I try to keep that updated. It has my events that are coming up.
It's really a nice site.
Thanks. That was my friend. I love using friends, and she's a local person here in Madison, and she's a graphic designer. And
well, I think that's where I saw that you, or maybe it's in your book, that you are offering a portion of the proceeds to go from the book to National Breast Cancer Coalition and the Wisconsin Well Women Program. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, I will be definitely donating proceeds not only to those two organizations, but I have readings. I have my first event actually that's coming up is a fundraiser for another organization, which I just learned about after I wrote the book, called Breast Cancer Recovery Foundation, which I had never heard of. I had heard of them, but I didn't know about them. So I'm actually doing a whole community fundraiser at my local yoga studio on September 27th and plan to do many more of these kinds of things so that we can raise awareness and money. There's a local woman here who has an organization called Dresses That Heal that funnels money to breast cancer recovery. And we're doing things like selling T-shirts and doing a silent auction, and I'm going to do a reading there. And so I am very much about doing that. My reading in San Francisco at Pepler's is a launch for Breast Cancer Awareness Month in that area for an organization called Breast Cancer Connections. And I think 15% of everything proceeds from that night, anything sold, will go directly to them. So it's funny because the more I do this, the more I'm finding out about more organizations. And
and
I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I'll do something where I'll funnel money to that. I'm also giving the keynote speech for the Breast Cancer Recovery Foundation conference on November 8th here. It's a phenomenal organization that sponsors trips for women who are survivors at any stage, and they do like these amazing kayaking, empowering female kind of trips up on Madeline Island. And I remember seeing them years ago. Again, remember I said I feel that connection sometimes
right.
to like stepmom and all that? I remember seeing these women in their scarves carrying like portaging kayaks up on Madeline Island. This would be like 8 years ago, way before anything ever was on my radar.
Yeah.
And I remember just standing there thinking, that is so amazing, and getting all teary-eyed. And so this is that organization. But Wisconsin Women, the two that I picked, my husband helped me pick, he's a physician. I said, what are the organizations that help funnel money mainly for women to get mammograms and make sure they're getting checkups? Because that's my biggest concern, is that while I love this breast cancer recovery, which is about helping women who are survivors, my initial concern is that women who are impoverished, I think, aren't always getting their mammograms, so then by the time they go in, they have a much later stage of cancer. And that's, so I guess that's where my initial feeling was. I want to make sure that all women have access, and that's what those two organizations.
I just had a thought. I've been putting mine off, so when I hang up the phone, I'm going to call my the imaging center and get that thing set up, because just had this feeling.
Because that's why I ended up with the better cancer, was because I didn't have a lump. I had calcifications, which can only be found on a mammogram. So that's why I always encourage women to get those mammograms. It's better to get it, you know, if it's caught early, it's just much better, obviously.
And do you have links to all the organizations that you just spoke about on your website?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Well, I will definitely put your website in the show notes of this show. Is there anything else that we've missed? Is there anything else you'd like to offer before we go?
No, this has been so delightful. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate having you on the show, and I wish you all the best with the book and all the different things that you're involved with, and it'll be neat to just keep track of you on your website. You've got, like I said, you've got a great blog, and I recommend people go check it out.
Thank you. And I love to hear from people. I guess I'd say that.
Okay.
If they want to email me, I do. It's very gratifying to hear from people, and I will email them back.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, thank you, Gail.
Thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome. And I wanted to encourage everybody to go to wordstomouth.com for those links to Gail's website and her book. And the book, Gail, the book comes out October 1st, correct?
That's right. Officially out October 1st.
Yeah. Okay. Great. If you want to enter to win a free book, I've got a book from Gail that we can put into our book giveaway drawing. Just comment on this interview at wordstomouth.com, or you can call 206-309-7318 and leave a voicemail that I can play on air. Speaking of voicemails, I wanted to play one now.
Hi, this is Christy in Utah. I just found your website, and I have to say I'm really enjoying reading all of your articles and author interviews. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate hearing from you guys. Please make sure to subscribe on iTunes to make it easier to get the Words to Mouth shows delivered to your computer for free. And as always, thanks to Natalie Brown for her song, You Gotta Believe, from the PodSafe Music Network. Thank you so much for listening, and take good care. Until next time.